Hello and welcome to the Challenge Podcast, where we discuss all things public service in Singapore. I'm your host, Douglas O'Loughlin, an organization development consultant and a former public officer. Today, we are happy to have with us educator and counselor Carlin Lee, who's with Neon Polytechnic. He is also a mindfulness practitioner. So welcome to the show, Carlin.
Hi, Douglas. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay. How are you doing today?
Yeah, pretty good. Yep.
That's good to hear. You know, for our listeners who are not familiar, can you help us understand what like a student counselor does, particularly in Neon?
So other than one-to-one counseling for students, we are also involved in initiatives that support student mental health, such as the Peer Helper Club and the mental health curriculum as well.
Okay. And I understand that there's also, in Neon at least, most or all lecturers get some training on how to do counseling work with students?
Yeah, so all ACAD staff do get trained in the basic counseling skills. And from there, we hope that we can actually train them with the intermediate counseling skills as well for those who may be interested and put their hand up to be a para-counselor to support students on top of their lecturing duties as well.
Wow, you know, that really sounds like a wonderful skill for all teachers in the world, really, to have, you know, at least be that first responder, I guess. And if it's more serious, they can pass it on to the more professionals. Great idea. All right. You oversee the Polytechnic's mental health support ecosystem. So what does it entail? What's that all about?
So other than the initiatives for students, I also oversee the initiatives for staff, including the engagement of the para-counselors, who are lecturers trained with more counseling skills, and the other training programs for staff. I also work with internal and external stakeholders to enhance mental wellness in my organization.
Wow, that seems like a lot. How do you feel like it's made a lot of progress in the school? Everything's going okay?
Yeah, I believe that we have a pretty good system and a very good overarching system that take care of students from all areas, from their peers to the lecturers to the para-counselors to the counselors themselves. So we have a very good system that we are able to support the students from all aspects.
That's great. And I love that this ecosystem, right, and not look at it as just individual situations. So you have really, we were talking before, you have a really interesting and wide range of experience in the psychology field, performance psychology. You've worked with nurses, police officers, you know, in a lot of different high intensity situations. Can you tell us more about how did you get into that and why and what's it all about? What's that like?
So after I finished my undergraduate studies in psychology, I moved on to do a postgraduate study in performance psychology in Australia. I was trying to make the choice of pursuing my postgraduate studies in the psychology aspects of supporting students or sports, and which both are my areas of interest. And eventually I was accepted into the program. It actually covered a range of topics, including professional psychological practice, mental health, intervention methods as well to enhance performance for people.
So is it fair to say that if an athlete and, as you mentioned, like people in healthcare, police, and even students need to be sharp like that under what can be quite intense circumstances?
Yeah, because when we think about performance, we often think about athletes and people who need to perform. But we also need to understand that people need to perform from a day-to-day basis, including those like nurses who work in the ER or the policeman or the fireman, you know, who need to perform in very critical situations. And this also includes students who, like we were discussing earlier, for their O levels, they study for 4 years and now they only have one exam to prove themselves. So that's almost like the Olympics of studies, right? For those taking the O levels.
Yeah, it really is. It's a good way to look at it. So So we know that you're a mindfulness practitioner, and just wondering if you can share with everyone kind of how would you define mindfulness? And it seems like there's some misperceptions about mindfulness. Can you help our listeners get a bit more clarity on what mindfulness is all about?
So let's start with the misconceptions. A lot of people think that mindfulness may be sitting there, meditating and not moving for half an hour, for an hour or so. Mindfulness is part of meditation, but it's not fully meditation. Mindfulness is the ability to be fully present, to be aware of where we are and what we are doing, sensing and feeling at the present moment. So this is a typical definition from most mindfulness resources. And being mindful will require one to intentionally pay attention to the present moment and notice the sights and sounds, your thoughts, your emotions, your physical behavior, your physiology in your body, and keeping a non-judgmental stance towards what is being observed in the body and what's around you.
I mean, I've heard it say that it's actually not that hard to be mindful, but it's actually hard to remember to be mindful. I don't know if that's fair.
Yeah, it's a pretty kind of intention practice. As we say it.
Yep. So anytime, all day, we can choose to be mindful.
Yep. Even as taking a walk through the park, that could be a moment for mindfulness as well.
Can you share a little bit, for those who are still thinking about it, some of the benefits, like whether it's at work or school or personal life?
Some of the benefits include being more aware of your current thoughts and feelings and having more control of them, increased relaxation, less stress, increased attention, and for some, being happier as well. For work and study, the increased awareness of thoughts and control of these emotions, especially during stressful situations, would definitely lead to an increase of performance. And for use of mindfulness in your personal life, mindfulness may actually lead to better communications and relationships with people due to the clearer thought processes and understanding of your own emotions.
Nice. And it occurs to me that if people practice, including us, right, if we practice mindfulness and we're more aware of, like you say, our thoughts and our feelings, our body, our physical sensations, then we're actually more likely to catch stress or things before it gets to the point of, you know, brown out or being too crispy or anything like that. So it's great. So how about for those of you people, the listeners who want to get started, they've heard about it. Those benefits are quite amazing. So to say, okay, please, Carlin, how do we start? Where's a good place to begin?
So for a start, a good practice would be practicing deep breathing exercises. So through purposeful deep breathing and paying attention to each breath, you can actually start to calm yourself down and to gain awareness to your emotions and how you're feeling at the moment. So the deep breathing technique that I normally teach is the 4-2-8 technique, where it is 4 seconds of breathing in through the nose, holding it there for 2 seconds, and followed by 8 seconds of slow breathing out through the mouth. So with my students and clients that I taught this technique, some of the benefits that they get include being calmer, reduced negative thoughts, and feeling more relaxed as well. And this comes out even when they do it for a few minutes.
So I think the one area in this whole, mental health and even mindfulness, COVID has brought about a whole new way of seeing things for a lot of people. People are reassessing their priorities in life and, you know, think about what truly matters. So speaking of mindful, how can people be more mindful of that? Let's call it a sweet spot between, what we need to do and what we want to do, get things done, and also taking care of ourselves.
I think, firstly, we really need to have those breaks of practice of mindfulness. It could be just a minute or two as you take a cup of water or go for a shower in between the days, and to actually feel that sense of relaxation as you transit from one activity to the next activity. And talking about COVID, I think the period of COVID was stressful for me too. And I also wondered about this question of how to balance mental well-being and the productivity of work. With most people actually working from home at the moment, it is quite unavoidable that work and personal life are inseparable. And some may actually even be working longer hours than usual. Yes. And in my opinion, I believe it's a question of building the work-life boundaries where you intentionally draw a line between where you work and when you spend time for yourself. Probably organizations and managers can start the practice of boundaries with their staff to reduce the communications and WhatsApps of messages and things like this after the working hours. And this will actually guide the staff to practice the boundaries for themselves as well. We definitely need this distinction to focus on ourselves, our family, our own mental health as well. I think it is truly a choice that we make for ourselves.
Sounds good. I have talked to a few people who said what they really missed in the transition from work from home was the half-hour commute that they used to have, you know, where they like kind of disengage and then re-engage with their family at home, and of course, vice versa. So they try to create habits at home because now there's no more commute. I even know a few people who dress up for their work from home and then put in shorts and a singlet and, you know, after, you know, to set the boundary, so to speak, which is quite a cool idea. So now, related to COVID, it seems to have really brought up to the forefront for the whole country, really, this issue of mental health. And even mental health, the term also has a bit of a stigma to it.
I think, I believe we need to build more awareness and understanding before we can truly reach this stage of acceptance for those with mental health issues. There are currently many initiatives and groups that are working to increase awareness of mental health in Singapore. However, there are still many people who do not really understand about mental health. So without this understanding of these issues, it might be difficult to reach the state of acceptance for them. And to actually fight this stigma, I believe that we need to firstly educate people about the distinction of these two words, mental health and mental health conditions, also known as mental illnesses. Mm. Both of them have the word mental, but they are totally two different concepts. So mental health, like our physical health, asks the question of, are you healthy? With the answer falling within the spectrum of feeling healthy and not feeling healthy. So from the aspect of physical health, you may be obese and unfit, but you may not be sick or ill. So similarly, you may be practicing unhealthy mental health habits or indulging in unhealthy coping methods, such as not sleeping enough, stress eating, but you may not have a mental health condition or mental illness. So I believe this current issue with the stigma is that a lot of people lump these two words together, of poor mental health and mental illnesses together, and believe that there is always a connection between having poor mental health and therefore you have a mental illness.
Great. I think that's a good distinction. I think we really need to get rid of that stigma, you know, that mental health is a bad word to talk about. And for people to talk, have a friend, right, that they can talk to. I know at Civil Service College, I had two colleagues that when I was going through a tough time, I could reach out to them and talk, and they would listen and share. And boy, it means a lot just to reach out to somebody and have a conversation, and somebody just listens, right? Without, you know, if it's more serious, you have to go to somebody, a professional like yourself. So how about for those who are maybe some of us or our friends who are struggling with mental health issues, I guess, to make that distinction, and what are the steps that people can make?
So if you have a diagnosed mental health condition or you suspect that you may have a mental health condition, I would definitely recommend that you seek help from a professional. Don't delay treatment, hoping that all these issues will go away with time. Because from the professional, you will learn techniques to deal with the symptoms and recover from the condition with time. And definitely, like we mentioned earlier, it's different. For those with unhealthy mental health habits, and you might find yourself practicing these habits to deal with the stress, probably something that you could do is pay attention to the stress levels and understand where the triggers are or what triggers yourself to have this stress. And from there, you can choose to move away from the triggers or choose better coping methods. I definitely would recommend that you focus on social support and connect with people that you're very close to, such as your friends and family.
So it comes back to mindfulness in some way, and to be really, or self-awareness of what's happening, so it doesn't, well, at least we do our best to limit some of the issues that might arise. Yeah. I understand that the team that, you know, you're part of, and I guess probably all counselors in the country and psychologists are pretty overwhelmed, I suppose, since COVID started. You do that all day, every day. That's a lot. So how do you all manage that?
I think that's a thing that we do is that we often have conversations with our peers at work to understand about each another, to understand about the stress, such that the managers know what's happening with the colleagues and we know the stresses that's happening for each another, and we are able to accommodate and support and provide that, you know, that mental and social support for each another as well, as a group. And I guess that helps to increase our performance with time. And it's not a matter of getting work done, but a matter of making sure that everybody is well, because if we are okay, we will be able to do the things that we hope to do. It's the example that I always give. I know that everybody haven't been on a plane for a long time, but if you remember what the air steward or the air stewardess would say, you know, if you have a child with you, always wear your mask first before you help your child, right? And that's the similar thing that we say. Take care of yourself first, such that you would then be able to take care of people around you.
You know, I used to think that was a bit of a bluff, you know, or just a nice story to tell. But then I did read that. That's really true, because by the time you start to put it on your kid, there's a high chance that you would pass out. So, yes, I'm totally with you. I think that's a lesson for all of us, really, the power of just, you know, talking it out with a good listener, of course, somebody who's listening. So how much of that social support you talk about in your team, is it structured time? Is it kind of impromptu? Is it when somebody needs, they just go have a cup of tea and talk about it?
Usually it's impromptu. And it really depends on who is in office as well. Currently, with the new restrictions, so we can't really have face to face sessions. But you know, we've got the online one, and that's pretty much the best that we got. But through messaging each other and through the discussions that we can have online, I think that's the best that we have at the moment, even within our team as well.
So, I guess, when you think of the whole, you know, landscape, right, for, you know, this idea of mental health or well-being in Singapore, what do you think is missing, and what are your aspirations for the future for us as a country in this area?
I think we need to view mental health of Singaporeans from several levels, from a personal level, from an organizational level, and from a national level as well. So from the personal level, we need to learn to take care of ourselves, being mindful from time to time, knowing healthy coping methods to help ourselves such that we can therefore take care of our families as well. And from a work organizational level, we need to acknowledge that our staff working with us need that time and space to take care of their mental health, and that managers could actually check in with staff from time to time and to remind them of this work-life boundaries, right? Employers need to also understand that with good mental health, our staff would definitely work more productively and happier as well. And that is, I would say, the key ingredient for longevity in your career or people staying in your organization, that relationship and that happiness that they have with their managers. From a national level, hopefully that we could have more fundings for the different sectors such that we can actually increase headcount and manage the workload within each of these organizations. And hopefully we could have more effective mental health initiatives such that we can reduce stress for the staff, for the organization, and for individual people as well. So all this eventually would be in the hope of creating a culture of mental wellness and care for everybody in Singapore.
Wow, that's a beautiful aspiration. You know, I happened to see a posting on Reddit yesterday, and it said, Singaporeans are the most tired workers in the world, and we're tired of it. So I think you've provided some ideas for, yeah, how do we be well and not really be tired? Because tiredness is not just lack of sleep. It's all of those things that you mentioned. So do you have any last hopes, words of advice, reminders for our listeners?
I think a great reminder is definitely to take care of ourselves, to sleep well, to eat well, especially in this period of stress, in COVID and where everybody's experiencing a lot of stress. So taking good care of ourselves and having a proper routine, that will actually reduce a lot of stress and make sure that you have good connections with those that you love as well.
Most of those things are like small little things we can do on a day-to-day basis. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. Those are small things, but definitely very important things that we neglect as we become more and more busy and as we become more and more stressed.
All right, that's a nice way to finish. So thanks so much, for Carlin, for being part of the show, for making the effort to be here, and all the best to you and the team back at Neon.
Thanks, Douglas. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. I'm your host, Douglas O'Loughlin. Follow us for new episodes and visit psd.gov.sg/challenge for more public service stories.